You are Locked On Angels, your daily Los Angeles Angels podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everybody, welcome to Locked On Angels, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, now brought to you by Hotels.com. You're locked in with Taylor Blake Ward. Today is December 5th, 2019, Thursday, December 5th, 2019. Obviously, we're going to do our Sunday night Twitter question answer as we've been doing every week in the offseason. And part of the reason why we had to push it to Thursday this week is we had a lot of snow in the local region, and that snow also brought power outages. So it's been a struggle just to not only record, but kind of just go through the daily life of things here in the local mountains. So, but it's a pleasure to have you guys on board. Like we said, this is our Sunday night Twitter question answer. How we do this is I send out a tweet on Sunday night and I say, you know, send me any and all your baseball questions. I'll answer them here through midnight. Best ones make the show on Tuesday, or in this case, Thursday. You want to be a part of the show, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Locked On Angels. You can follow me personally at Taylor Blake Ward. Also, make sure to download or subscribe to any episodes on the Locked On Podcast Network via Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or any other podcasting platform that you use to listen to the show. Now, I do want to bring on a special guest for this week in our Q&A session. This is Jason Burke. Now, Jason, I'm bringing you on, and a lot of people don't know this. Actually, I'm not sure how many people know about this, but you're going to be taking on the Locked On A's. Or is it Locked On Athletics or Locked On A's?
We are still hammering that out right now. I think we're going Locked On A's and Oakland Athletics Baseball Podcast.
I love it. So, Jason, welcome aboard.
That effect.
Jason, welcome aboard to the Locked On Podcast Network. We're ecstatic to have you on board. I love that we have some more AL West teams being covered here. Jason, you mind staying on just for maybe the first segment here and answering a few questions with us?
Yeah, for sure, man.
All right. Well, this first one comes from Mike Rigby at kit_man_slang. Says, could you see the Angels trading for Mookie Betts, and what would the trade look like? We have a follow-up question that's going to come after this, but I've got my opinions. Jason, why don't you share yours to kind of start this off?
I'm going to go with I hope not, because that would be terrible for the A's, obviously. I mean, I'm not super well-versed on the Angels farm system, so I don't know if they have enough to make a deal happen. I mean, you can always trade guys off the major league roster too, but I mean, I really hope he doesn't come to the Angels or the AL West for that matter.
And see, in my opinion here, and Jason, this is probably a name you've heard before. If the Angels are going to get Mookie Betts, I think that Joe Adell has to be involved in that. I don't think the Angels plan on getting rid of Joe Adell in any sense. So it does lead us to our next question here. A follow-up here is from Angels Nation Talk at @talk_angels. Says, did you see the Joel Sherman article on the Red Sox and Angels trade idea? Yes, I know it's impossible, but does including Price and Eovaldi and Upton Cozart make sense, or would anything make sense in a trade with those teams? So, Jason, are you familiar with this article?
I am not.
So, in the article, it's talking about how teams could take on the contracts of David Price and Nate Eovaldi, and that way the prospect return for Mookie Betts may be lesser. I want to touch on this first, though. It didn't mean that it was like a contract swap. So trading Zach Cozart or Justin Upton, who Zach Cozart right now, I don't think he has any trade value whatsoever, would make any sense. I don't think the Red Sox are looking to, even though they would save money between this, I don't think it would make any sense for them to take on these contracts. I think it would still involve the prospects. Jason, I mean, what do you think? Adding David Price and Nate Eovaldi and adding into a Mookie Betts trade, I don't think the Angels, I think you still have to add Joe Adell in the mix here. Maybe you could sneak a lesser prospect, but I think it would take up the entire farm system just for Mookie Betts alone.
Yeah, I don't know why it would make sense for the Red Sox to trade Mookie Betts if they're not getting a Joe Adell type, you know, return at the very least. And then you got to go from there. Even if, you know, they're taking on contracts and all that, it wouldn't necessarily make sense for the Red Sox other than clearing up cap space. I mean, if they want to clear up cap space by trading Betts, so if they got rid of the other guys too, then, you know, that would also create more cap space, which would be great. But you don't need to do all three kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you there. I'm going to go on to the next question here. I think we covered that pretty well. This one from Phil at Philip Perales says, with Cole Calhoun gone, Showtime pitching, and Justin Upton returning from injury, who is going to produce those runs? Power bat options is a question mark, and thanks. So Phil probably doesn't know he's asking you, but I think what he's equating here is who's going to produce the runs that Cole Calhoun did in 2020 here. Do you have an opinion as an A's guy of who the Angels, maybe they bring in someone exterior, a free agent or a trade, or do you believe, you know, there's someone in-house? Do you see anyone that could produce the way that Cole has?
I mean, Joe Waddell would be a nice option.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's quite ready, but, you know, like maybe by May he could be up there and, you know, service time manipulation and all that. But, I mean, I think that he's probably the most fearsome person that, you know, nobody in the AL West wants to face. Kind of like Kyle Tucker, but, you know, when he finally got his opportunity a little bit later in the year, you don't want to face Joe Waddell. So he's the one that I'd be most scared of seeing on a more daily basis. So that would be my answer.
Yeah, and that was mine too. You know, I think that Justin Upton's going to return to at least some form of being the hitter that he was. He didn't have a spring training. His mechanics were so off, and he had to adjust at the major league level, which is just not something there. So I think Justin Upton comes back and provides some of that run production. But like you said, Joe Waddell, I think he's the obvious one. But I think the not obvious one is Brian Goodwin, who actually last year outperformed Cole Calhoun offensively. They were essentially the exact same player offensively. So having Brian Goodwin there as a stopgap for Joe Waddell, I mean, we're going to talk about this I'll even take it in the next question. I got to run down through my questions and find it. But I think Brian Goodwin actually could be that guy until Joe Waddell arrives. And if you platoon those guys for some time, I think it'd be smart to kind of work that through. And I think Brian Goodwin's a great answer there. I got to find this question here. And it does involve Brian Goodwin. Let's see here. There it is. This one from Big League Chewing at Chewing Cast says, any concerns that what Brian Goodwin did last year can be repeatable? So I'm going to type it up. Jason, do you want to answer this while I'm looking up Brian Goodwin's stats here?
I mean, sure. If memory serves, Brian Goodwin had like a good month or so. Or was that the year before? Either way, he had a good time while, you know, filling in for injuries and all that, and then he kind of tapered off a little bit after that. Is that correct? Or am I thinking of somebody from the year before?
No, that's roughly it.
Okay. I was like, was it Trout that was hurt? I think that was the year before. I don't know.
So Brian Goodwin last year played 136 games. He had a 109 weighted runs created plus, hit .262, .326 on base percentage, hit 17 home runs, was worth 1.9 WAR as essentially the fourth outfielder that turned into a guy that got a lot of time. Am I concerned that he's going to fall off? Now, watching Brian Goodwin play, I think he has excellent bat control. I think there's real natural strength there. To be a two-win player for Brian Goodwin, I think is really realistic. He does have to cut down the strikeouts. That's a big part of the game for him is striking out. But 17 home runs, being a little bit above a league average hitter, I don't think that that's going to fall off a whole lot with the way that he's hit. And he's going to be 30 most of next year. Personally, you know, maybe he's not the Brian Goodwin we saw last season, but even if he's, you know, a partial part of that, I think that he's going to be great. So having a league average bat and a guy that can play all those all four outfield positions, all three outfield positions, I think that, you know, I don't think there's much concern about what Brian Goodwin is going to be here going into 2020. And if he is the stopgap for Joe Waddell, I think it's a fine stopgap. What do you think, Jason?
I mean, if in today's game, the more league average players you have, if you have just a roster of league average players, you're going to have a monster team. So, I mean, the more guys you have like that, pair them with a Mike Trout, a Shohei Ohtani, a Joe Waddell, if he gets going early, they're going to be a really crazy good team if, you know, all the pieces start lining up. So, yeah, I mean, having a Brian Goodwin at league average even is great.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. So this one comes in from Carlos at AngelsFan04, says, do you think we will start seeing some free agent action this week before the winter meetings? Now, this came on Sunday night. Jason, we've seen quite a few free agents here. My answer to Carlos on Twitter was we've seen quite a bit. We saw Yasmani Grandal. And apparently that's the only one that can come to my mind. But who was it? Will Smith to the Giants? Mike Moustakas happened then. But now we're seeing Zach Wheeler come off the board. Cole Hamels come off the board. Do you think we're going to see – I mean, winter meeting starts in, what, 72 hours or like 100 hours from now? Do you think that? Do you think we're going to see more free agents sign over the next 100 hours here? I think Zach Wheeler and Cole Hamels is a pretty good place to start this week.
I mean, the one guy that I think would go to the Angels is Gerrit Cole. So, as an A's fan, I'm scared. But also, he'd be a really solid addition for the Angels. So, and you want to see Mike Trout go to the playoffs more often, or, you know, then be more competitive as like a baseball fan. So, I mean, that's the one that I think will happen.
I think that. Do you think it's going to happen this week, though?
I don't think so. Only because with the bigger guys like that, you know, Wheeler was like the third best pitcher on the market. Makes sense for him to sign. But Strasburg and Cole, they're probably going to hold out maybe until January, maybe, you know, Christmas, somewhere in there, to get that extra little bit of money.
I think when we watch winter meetings and how winter meetings goes along, I mean, I'll be down there. I don't know about you, Jason, but I'll be down. And, you know, seeing what winter meetings brings, that's when a lot of the conversations not only get to the peak points, but also kind of start to come into play. And it's like, you know, all these parties are meeting together in one place, and it does allow teams to understand who's doing what. Allows the agents and the players to kind of understand who's doing what, who has real interest, where is this money going to, you know, how much money, where is it going to be? I think everyone's kind of looking at winter meetings as the goal. I was surprised to see Zach Wheeler and Cole Hamels sign as early as they did, but looking at the money they got, absolutely it makes sense. I mean, that's my two cents. What about you there?
I think that it could happen, but I mean, in recent years, it's been the groundwork is laid, you know, at the winter meetings, and then you see where the chips fall from there. If one Foltner, you know, signs with a team before, between Strasburg and Gerrit Cole, if one of them signs, you know, during the winter meetings, the other one's probably going to hold out a little bit longer just because they're the only pitcher on the market at that point. But as long as both of them are there, you know, I think that they're going to be holding out for a little bit longer than the 72 hours or even through the winter meetings.
Yeah, I agree there. Next question here, and I got to figure out how many questions we're going to do in this first segment, but I'm going to take this one from The Real FM25. That's Fernando Mendez. Says, if you could go back in time and bring any former Angel pitching great to help out the rotation next season, who would it be and why? I would bring prime Jared Weaver because he was a killer who just wanted to win. I mean, I've got a very obvious one that I would bring in. I've got no problem with Jared Weaver. I love Jared Weaver at his peak. I thought he was fantastic, but I have definitely have a different guy in mind. What about you, Jason?
I mean, first guy that came to mind was Nolan Ryan.
Yeah.
Sure, he was a little bit older, but, you know, Nolan Ryan I'd go with. It's kind of hard to go against him.
Yeah, I mean, it's no, having him in any rotation. I mean, honest to God, how old is Nolan Ryan? Like 50 years old now? I bet he could still
be a little bit older than that. I'm gonna say 63. I'm gonna go. I don't know.
I'm gonna look this up. But realistically, that dude could probably still pitch in the majors right now.
Did you see the?
He's 72. I said 50.
Bombs?
I said 50, and he's 72 years old. How stupid is that? See, like, I think back, and it's like, you know, I see kids or people that I saw play as a kid, kind of thing. And I'm like, oh, yeah, well, they're all just 50 years old. And I realized, you know, that was 20 years ago. So I guess it makes sense.
I was like, wasn't he like 45 when he retired?
He was. Yeah. If I could take one Angels great in the past, it has to be Nolan Ryan. I would love to see Frank Tanana or Dean Chance even. There's a few guys. But, no, it's not close for me. It's Nolan Ryan. I mean, can you think of, like, a second guy? I mean, Weaver's not a bad choice. That's not bad, but
he had a solid few years there. He terrorized me in my childhood, so I get it.
Or even, like,
or early adulthood.
Mark Langston. Mark Langston's not a bad one either. But I feel like
there was a lefty who always gave the A's fits, and it was the same rotation as Jared Weaver.
A lefty?
Yeah. can't recall. He did not like the A's either.
Was it Irvin Santana?
No.
Well, he's not even a lefty. Gosh. Now it's going to bug me out.
My wife would remember. I could totally.
Was he a household name or was he? What year are we talking here?
He signed a big deal at some point. I think it was after the Angels. I think he signed with Texas.
What year are we talking?
Like 2012, 2013, somewhere in there.
Or CJ Wilson, but.
Yes.
CJ Wilson?
I think so.
Really? Because he was with Texas and then moved to the Angels.
And then he signed with. I reversed that. There we go.
Yeah. Really? Yeah, I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear CJ Wilson, but I think people forget how. So he signed that big contract, and that's kind of where people were like, oh, well, he didn't perform to his contract. I thought he was really good his first 2 years of that contract, and then obviously fizzled out a little at the end there. But I see you make this is why I have you, Jason. This is the reason. This is the big one. So
I don't know what the actual stats are, but I feel like he terrorized the A's, and he was kind of a jerk about it. So I was like, I don't like this guy.
I love CJ, man.
I would get with that.
He was a good dude. Let's take a few more before we head to a break. This one here from Ryan Mancuso, and it's at Ryan Mancuso, says, do you think it is prudent for the Angels to make a trade for pitching or a catcher, knowing there is not a lot in the high levels of the farm system right now? We can only do so much with free agency, but I don't want to mortgage the future. Now, Jason, you covering the A's, the Oakland A's don't really have the luxury of giving up talent at the high level of the, you know, the farm system. The A's don't have the money to really compete heavily on the free agent market. The Angels do. What's your opinion here? Do you think that trading is going to be a more sensible way to acquire a pitcher or catcher for the Angels? I mean, we saw it yesterday with bringing in Dylan Bundy, which we're going to talk about in a different episode later today. But what's your opinion here?
Well, I was going to say they should go out and get Dylan Bundy, but you stole my thunder there.
Ah.
I mean, I think it's because it's how I've seen baseball done for a couple decades now. You go out and you get the guys either for short term, where you trade some like lower level pieces that, you know, could help, could not, and, you know, get what you need for that year. But I'm not familiar with how to, you know, $100 million contract or anything. So I think that, you know, Garrett Cole and Dylan Bundy would be a great starting block for, you know, the rotation for next year. And you got Ohtani coming back, who's going to be so much fun to watch. And all of a sudden, pitching's okay. I'd probably go the trade route just because of where my fandom lies. But, I mean, if you can spend the money, spend the money.
Yeah, that's my opinion, is you have the luxury. You have the luxury of viewing the free agent market right now without losing players, and you can look that in the eye and say, look, Garrett Cole is there. Jason Castro is there. There's other pitchers there. I personally, you know, maybe a trade would help, but I would rather look at the market and say, I'm going to spend my money to kind of do this here.
Oh, for sure.
Especially and, I mean, when I, you have it.
How are they with the luxury tax right now? Are they up against it, or they're – you know what? They've got some room, right?
Yeah, we're going to – actually, I'm going to take that question here. We have a question about that. So let's move into that. This one is from Terry West at Broadway Terry. Says, I'm confused. Keep hearing Angels only have about $30 to $35 million to spend to reach last year's budget, but guys came off the board along with DFAs have cut about $52 million off last year's budget, and I can't find any additions. And this is without the mysterious increase that Artie Moreno wants to give. What's up? So I'll start here. With the Angels, they had $31 million come off the board in one-year deals between Cody Allen, Matt Harvey, Trevor Cahill, Justin Bour. Then you add the $14 million option that Cole Calhoun had. It ended up being $13 million after a $1 million buyout. So that's already $44 million. You make a few non-tender moves. You cut a few guys. The Angels have roughly $50 million to spend here, and that's just to meet last year's budget. Now, obviously, you go in and you look at arbitration figures to kind of maneuver. That's about $20 million, but you're not losing that because you already had that in place. You already had these players that are arbitration eligible in the system. So, yeah, I mean, the Angels go in with about, I think it was $110 million roughly is what they already are there for guaranteed money. You add in Dylan Bundy yesterday, so the Angels have about, $25 million in arbitration figures. So that's what, $130 to $140 million? Angels, I could see them going up to $180 million. So, what, you know, we're still talking about $40 to $50 million here. I mean, Jason, I'm no mathematician, but does this make sense to you? I mean, does this sound about right?
I mean, they've got Mike Trout and they've got money. It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
You want to go in while Trout's still, you know, being Trout, because, you know, players decline eventually. I don't know if he will because he's fantastic. But, you know, you got to do it while the iron's hot.
Yeah, so wherever, Terry, wherever you're hearing this $30-whatever million, it's not true. The Angels have quite a bit more than that. Let's do some quick ones here, Jason, because we're pushing the 20-minute mark. Let's go here to Andy Lee. Andy with two Ys, two Ls, and two Es says, thoughts on Josh Hader trade availability. I'll start this one off. I don't think the Brewers are trading Josh Hader. I think that's kind of a little bit of a smokescreen. Maybe he is available. Maybe they've said that he's available, but I think it's a bit of a smokescreen to kind of see if someone will overpay for a reliever. What's your opinion?
I mean, that feels like a you know, a very Oakland A's move to trade Hader, and I don't mean because, you know, he's good and, you know, all that. I mean because he's a reliever that pitches 80 innings a year, and he's probably going to start either declining or break down, deal with injuries or something like that. You want to get value for him before, you know, that value decreases. And that would make a lot of sense on their part. And I mean, this is me not being a GM at all. They'd probably be going for like a Joe Adell or something in return, you know, like a really good prospect in return, or somebody on the major league roster. But I don't know that, you know, the Angels want to trade anybody from the major league roster there.
Yeah, I was thinking back to the Aroldis Chapman trade, Andrew Miller trade. I mean, it worked for both teams, but at the same time, Andrew Miller is not what he was a few years ago. And Aroldis Chapman, I mean, he's still pretty good, but he's still not the guy that he was a few years ago. Josh Hader, I personally don't get it. I don't think the Brewers would trade him. And like you said, though, finding a package that someone's going to overpay for this reliever makes a lot of sense. So maybe the Brewers do pull the plug there. One more before we head to break. This one from John Burke at Jeb Wood says, would you give Julio Teheran a 2-year deal? my answer is short. I'll say no. What about you, Jay?
As an A's fan, where they just like, I'll go with no, but I'm used to, you know, reclamation projects and all that stuff. So I'm like, I mean, it'll probably work out just fine. But I mean, if there was a reclamation project that I'd get on, and I don't even know if it's a project at this point, but I mean, Taiwan Walker's out there if you guys want him.
Yeah, no kidding. So, Jay, we got to head to a short break. You mind staying on with us?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, before we head to our second segment, we're going to talk about Breaking Tea. Now, Breaking Tea is a T-shirt company that ties in with the passion moments of sports. These passion moments happen with every team and every fan base, and then Breaking Tea jumps on the moment to make T-shirts that make the moment live forever. When these moments happen, we'll join in with Breaking Tea to make these T-shirts available to you, the listeners, through www.breakingtea.com/lockedon. And I've told you guys before, if you've listened to the show, I really like this sponsor. They're one of my favorite sponsors. I've come up with some concepts when it comes to the Angels, not just the Angels, but even the minor league affiliates. And I think that this is going to be a great, great sponsor for us. I think you guys are going to really enjoy them. So go over to www.breakingtea.com/lockedon to check them out. We'll be right back with more Locked On Angels right after a quick word from our sponsors. Welcome back to Locked On Angels, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You're locked in with Taylor Blake Ward and Jason Burke of Locked On A's. It's a pleasure to have Jason on. Jason just taken over Locked On A's. So you can, when you guys get started, people can go check that out. Do you have a target date on when you're getting started here?
We're going to do the teaser episode here in a few days, and then that'll get on to Apple and all that in about a week or so. So probably for the holidays.
Ooh, all right. Well, yeah. Make sure you're checking out Locked On A's. Jason, you going to play Goldfinger like we do here? Are you going to do that?
Oh, I have not thought about that at all.
See, we've been closing out the show. I was closing out the show with closing time for a long time. And I think people are over it at this point. It's kind of like
as a restaurant employee, I am very familiar with playing closing time at closing time.
No kidding. Did you ever see that Office episode where he plays closing time at the end of every day and then people get real sick of it? And then
I don't think I saw that one.
And Stanley walks in and he's like, "It's a song about leaving work. I love this song. It's my new favorite song." I love that stuff. Obviously, you listening in here at Locked On Angels, you're not going to listen to Jason and I talk about The Office and music here. You're checking out your questions from our Sunday night Twitter question answer. So let's get to some more of your questions here. This first one comes from at Gonzalez32Sal. His Twitter name is Angels 2020 World Series Champions. I like the optimism. Says, "I know this is an old question, but I still wonder what happens to the Angels in the 2014 ALDS. Jason, do you want to start with this one, or do you want me to take it?
You go ahead.
Okay, so when it comes to the playoffs, matchups are so vital. And the matchups, when you looked at what the Angels and Royals did, I think I remember writing the series preview for that, and I was talking about how the Angels actually had to put on a display of power because the Royals' defense and their speed were going to be the real option. So if you hit into their defense, there was a good chance the ball wasn't going to fall in play. And even a guy like Nori Aoki, who's a terrible fielder, had one of the best defensive series you could have. I mean, he stole so many hits from the Angels that series. Also on top of that, the pitching matchups worked great. And the Royals ran really well against a very weak defensive catching staff. And also, if you remember the Angels from like 2012 to 2014, they were very long to the plate. So that kind of was a big part. I did not think they'd get swept, of course. You also add on top that Josh Hamilton didn't perform well. And Mike Trout only had one hit that entire series. I mean, I'm not going to ever, you know, say something bad about Mike Trout, but he didn't have a great series, and you need your stars to show up. And you got to remember, it was his first time in the playoffs. He's still a young kid at this time. He was, let's see, 2014, so he was 22, 23. I mean, you know, these things happen. Jason, anything you want to add on top of that?
I was at one of those games. It was a lot of fun for, you know, not having a rooting interest.
Yeah. No, that was a great series. I mean, as funny as it is, it was a really fun series to see a sweep, even though covering the Angels, it really didn't go well for them. But there were some good games. Games one and two at Angel Stadium were fantastic.
I believe we were at game one, and if I remember correctly, low-scoring affair.
Were you there when Matt Shoemaker – was it Matt Shoemaker pitching?
I do not remember.
Because I remember he was throwing –
we were at Disneyland for the weekend. I was like, oh, we should go to this Angels game real quick. Well, we got the tickets because the A's were in the wild card, and we're like, oh, the A's might be playing, you know, the Angels down there. We should totally have tickets. And then they played one of the most thrilling wild card games and lost.
That was a fun one.
We got on a plane like a few hours later, and we went to that game.
That was a really fun wild card game. I remember that one. I mean, so you were at game one-ish. That's when Matt Shoemaker was pitching, and I remember it was him against I don't think it was against Ventura. I think he pitched game three.
He might have pitched a wild card.
It was John Lester in the wild card, I think.
But did he face Ventura in that one? Because he was their best pitcher.
Oh, he was with the A's at that time, huh? No, wait. I can't remember. I cannot remember for the life of me on this. Oh, well.
Was James Shields still in the Royals at this point?
You know what? I feel like he was. I feel like he was. I'm just trying to – I can't remember this, but I feel like I should. Last time the Angels were in the playoffs, right? I think we've dug a hole big enough for both of us to be in at this point. Let's move on to the next question. This one from Ruben Rosas at RJRosas16 ask about it says MLB Network recently talked about ways to use Shohei Ohtani this upcoming season. They talked about using him as a closer, middle reliever, or Sunday starter. Which do you prefer, and do you see it being a pro or con for free agent pitchers wanting to sign here? Jason, you start with this one because I have very strong opinions on this.
Okay, so from the baseball fan standpoint, I think I would like to see him as the closer because then he could play, you know, in the field during the game, presumably. If that is not the case, have him be the Sunday starter because you want to see as much Shohei doing both as possible. Middle reliever, that doesn't really work because then you got to take him out and then he leaves the game on offense too, and that doesn't make any sense. As a closer, you can make it work with a little bit of manipulation. And then starter, just being a starter. So that makes sense.
See, now I'm going to take what you said about the middle relief role and how I don't see it working because you don't want Shohei pitching. Putting him as a reliever does limit his innings and it does kind of protect his health a little bit, but it also has him pitching every other day or every second day or even back-to-back days. I don't want that. And also, you want to keep him in his routine. He's always started. His career has always been as a starter. And I think that there's a Sunday starter, having him pitch once a week, having him hit the rest of the time, I think that's great. As for the pros, see, that's my opinion. I see zero reason to put him as a reliever unless it's near the middle part of the season or you're going towards the playoffs and you kind of want to protect his arm a little bit there. But I just see zero reason to have him as a reliever. Is it a pro or con, though, for free agent starters to sign with the Angels knowing that they'd pitch every fifth day instead of every sixth day instead of every fifth day? They'd be in a six-man rotation. What's your take on that?
Does it affect how much money they're going to make? Because if not, then I think it'd be okay.
Yeah.
It depends on where they are in their career. You know, if they're a free agent, then this is their big deal. So, I mean, if they're going to get their payout, then they don't really have to worry about, you know, accumulating all the stats. Like, they don't need to get 20 wins. If, you know, they're good with a 15 and, you know, 8 season or whatever, then, and they're still getting paid, that's fine. They don't need their, you know, they don't need to buff up the resume for that payday because they already got it.
Yeah, and that was my opinion on this. I touched on this quite a while ago, and I can't remember who asked the question, but, you know, obviously pitchers do have routines. They have a very standard routine that they've gone through their entire career. But at the same time, you're telling someone that you're going to pay them $100 million and also give them an extra day off every week. I like that idea. I don't mind signing with the Angels for that. I think that if
– do it if nobody else will.
I think that if there's a guy that would kind of not want to break this routine, it'd be someone like Madison Bumgarner, even though he could use that extra day rest. But you're going to find guys that are kind of in tune with what's going on, what you could call new school baseball, the analytics, and old school baseball, you know, those kind of things. Someone that's wants the baseball every single day. Someone like Madison Bumgarner. That's why you love Madison Bumgarner, is because he wants the ball every day. That's a guy that might say, no, I don't want to pitch. You know, you're going to have to rework this rotation, even if you have to find a place for your Ohtani. I want the ball every fifth day. But a guy that's newer, say a Gerrit Cole, essentially, that understands the analytics a little more, I think it's going to be understanding. So that's kind of my take there. Next question comes in from lovely.
Sorry,
everybody. No, you're good. I did pause for a response, and I'm like, oh, wait, no, let's just move on. Let's take this one from Luis at _661 photography. Says, how much say do you think Mike Trout has when it comes to the team signing free agents? I'll start this one off. Mike Trout has kind of said that his phone is available. He's actually literally said that. He says, my phone's available to call me anytime you want. So that, I think that free agents would call in and say, look, Mike, what do you think? You know, is it going to make sense for me to play here? And he may call guys, you know, but you can't really call guys and say, look, you need to sign with us kind of crap. None of that LeBron James stuff, even though I love LeBron James. What do they call that? Do you remember what they call what LeBron James did?
Tampering.
Yeah, that's a legal word for it. But was it recruiting? Recruiting or whatever?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
It is tampering. I don't think Mike Trout's doing any tampering, but at the same time, if a free agent calls him and asks him about things, and also Mike Trout is going to be talking to Billy Epler saying, yeah, this guy is someone that I think would really help us, and he's going to be calling Artie Moreno saying the same thing. I don't think he has the ultimate say, but I think he definitely does have an opinion. I don't think he's afraid to share that opinion. Jason, what's your take?
I mean, if Mike Trout is going to talk to me about, you know, playing baseball with him, then yeah, I think that it's definitely a selling point for coming to the Angels, and they should use that as often as he will let them.
Absolutely. So move on to this one from Ron Mexico. Ron has one of my favorite Twitter handles, and he calls it like it is. He's at JC in the LBC. Do you know what the LBC is, Jason?
I am familiar with the the language from my early youth and, you know, Snoop and Dr. Dre and stuff. It's Long Beach, right?
Yes, Long Beach, Long Beach City. So JC in the LBC, Ron Mexico asks, TB Dub. That's my initials, TBW. You got to add in JB here. So TB Dub and JB, he says, I think we all know the Angels are going after big name starting pitchers in free agency, but how about a big name corner infielder? Jason, go ahead. And I want to see an outside perspective on this. So Jason, you go ahead and take that.
Oh, I think there's only one on the market. So, Anthony Rendon, welcome to Los Angeles Angels. And that's actually, they don't have the of Anaheim the last few years. So, the Los Angeles Angels.
Yeah.
Are there other corner free agents that are out there right now that are big name?
There's Josh Donaldson.
I guess so, yeah. He would actually be a really nice fit because it'd only be a couple of years. So.
Yeah. But,
or two or three.
As for if they're going to be looking at big name free agent corner infielders, though, I don't see it, because priority here for the Angels is starting pitchers. Obviously Gerrit Cole is the top of that list, but at the same time, can you really see them going after someone else? That I don't see them going after someone that's a big target, that's an offensive bat, when they need so much help on the pitching staff. Do you agree there, Jason?
Yeah, I definitely do. The Pujols contract, even if it made sense for, a myriad of reasons, the Pujols contract kind of slows him down a little bit. So, first base is kind of off limits for those reasons. And, you got Ohtani as the DH, so you're not going to spend a lot of money getting a first baseman. So it'd be Donaldson or Rendon, and they might get a better offer somewhere else. But I could see Donaldson maybe working in there. If you got Donaldson and Cole, be a solid, 1-2 signing, and then go with Dylan Bundy, and got the makings of a, an upswing for sure.
I like it. So speaking of Gerrit Cole, this one from Omar at Omar underscore McBuckets says, if Gerrit Cole were to land somewhere else, what would, in your opinion, still be a successful offseason in order to get the Angels competitive again in 2020? I think that there's only one way. I think that I've said this from the get-go, and if you listen to the show and you know me well, I'm not one of those people that says throw the white flag in or whatever, but Gerrit Cole is essentially your white flag. There just happened to be an addition to the offseason that kind of helped out in Steven Strasburg. I think that you have to get one of those two guys to really say that you're going to be competitive in 2020 and beyond that. Without Gerrit Cole, a successful offseason to get the Angels competitive is to fill that rotation, but fill it with real talent. And that's going to start with Gerrit Cole or Steven Strasburg. And I still think, even with the addition of Dylan Bundy, you still have to add one more starter here. Jason, what would it take for the Angels to be competitive again in 2020 without adding Gerrit Cole?
I mean, Strasburg is the obvious one for me. If they wanted to get a little more creative and take a chance, I don't know that it would definitely work, but Chris Archer is probably available, and he's not going to cost nearly as much as it took to get him in the first place. So you could take a chance on Chris Archer for, I think he's got a couple years left on the deal, and he's not making a ton of money. And you could, go get Donaldson as a corner outfield or corner infielder if you wanted to, and see how that works. But you definitely need to address the rotation, and if they don't get Strasburg or Cole, Archer might be a decent cost for value kind of guy, or you can go after somebody else as well.
I think that's fair. So this one here, this next one comes from Stephen Fangmeyer at Racing Cowboy three, and I didn't realize that I've seen, so we talked about this, I come from a racing background, auto car racing, And Steven is a dirt modified racer. He races down at the local tracks at Paris. I don't know. We didn't get to talking a whole lot, but he races down at Paris, the one with two R's and an E instead of the A and the R. I just want to send my good luck wishes to Steven as he races through in the dirt modifieds. I have a guy that I know fairly well that races in the dirt modifieds, and Matt Mills. But you know, Steven, if you go beat up on Matt, I actually think that's going to work out well for him. So this one comes from Steven Fangmeyer, dirt modified race car driver, says, "What can the organization do, if anything, to curb the number of injuries we have been seeing the past couple years with guys missing considerable time? Or is it just luck of the draw?" Jason, why don't you lead off with this one?
I mean, it could be strength and conditioning. I know that there's been a lot of, you know, advances in baseball, you know, with getting people getting more sleep and, you know, eating better and stuff like that. So, I mean, there's always room to improve there. But assuming that that's already being taken care of, it's luck of the draw at this point. There's really nothing you can do about it. So you just got to build up the depth and go from there.
And adding on top of this, the Angels have explored a lot of the reasons why there were so many injuries. They really looked deep into this, didn't find any conclusive evidence on anything, and a lot of, you know, they did let go of some trainers, but a big part of this was what Jason just said. They're telling their players to sleep better, get more sleep, eat healthier, and also we're looking at a time in baseball where power is such a prominent force, so you're seeing guys swing harder, throw harder. And when you think about how the body works, the body should not be able to throw a baseball at 100 miles per hour. That's not a sign, you know, scientifically, that is a bad thing for the body to do. It's a bad thing for the elbow and the shoulder. For a batter to be able to hit, you know, these 450-foot home runs and the torque and compression they're doing on their spine and core, that's not something the body is used to doing. So it's something that not only the Angels have to deal with, but baseball is seeing a lot more injuries. And it's kind of, you know, there's obvious science behind it, and we're trying to figure out the science behind throwing a 100-mile-per-hour baseball, and we're finding out how to do these things. But it's how to find out how to do these things at a healthier rate. And that's, sadly, baseball can look at a guy that throws 100 miles per hour, look at him for a season, use him as a marking ploy, and then he could be gone the next year, and baseball can move on. That's the sad reality of it. So it's on youth coaching, in my opinion. It's on coaching, you know, youth development, young development, and, you know, any time from the time you're starting to play baseball at a young age all the way until you're in your 20s and 30s, I think that physical and health development should be involved with your baseball development as well. Let's move on to this one here. Joe Adele 2020 at Halo Nation 335 ask, what baseball player would be considered like a fine wine because they only get better with age? Jason, go on ahead with this one.
Mike Trout.
Really?
Okay. I mean, he's pretty solid.
But he's hitting his prime, though. I mean, he is getting better with age.
I think that he's just going to keep getting better as he ages. He figures something out every year that, you know, he wasn't stealing enough bases and steals more bases. He's better on defense now. Whatever flaw he finds in his game one year, it's fixed the next year, and he's great. So I think that Mike Trout is definitely up there. I mean, if he can play 150 games a year, he'll be fine.
Okay. That was not the answer I was expecting at all, but I love it. Well, my obvious answer, which was kind of a jerk move here for Halo Nation, I said Jim Morris. Do you remember Jim Morris?
I do.
Dennis Quaid? But what was it? Steve Delabar did the same thing. Jim Morris, they both started their careers in their late 30s or mid to late 30s. But I was talking to Jason Hernandez, who's a Locked On Anaheim Ducks guy, and he said Randy Johnson. He said it seemed like Randy Johnson just got better and better and better, and he never declined even all the way into his mid to late 30s. And I started thinking about Justin Verlander. I mean, Justin Verlander was really good in his 20s. But what we're seeing him do in his 30s right now, that's like a fine wine to me. I mean, the guy, I think this last year was arguably one of his best seasons, and it was his, what, age 36, age 37 season?
I think it's 37, or he's going to be 37. It's, yeah, so it's one of those two ages.
So I'm going to go with Justin Verlander on this one. I think.
Can I change my answer to that one, too? That's a really good answer.
Absolutely, you
I
can change.
I was more speculative.
Absolutely, you can change it. let's take this one here from Eric Marsh at City Marsh. Says, why have the Angels struggled to produce starters since Jared Weaver? I'll take this one here, Jason, just to start off. Is pitching, starting pitching, is the hardest thing to develop outside of a catcher. You're not going to see a lot of teams just suddenly develop players out of nowhere, you know, develop starting pitchers out of nowhere, unless you're the Houston Astros, of course, or the New York Yankees. But starting pitching is the hardest thing to develop from, whether it be high school or college, all the way through a pro career into the major leagues. Now, when it comes to the Angels, they didn't have a lot of high draft picks, so their ability to develop high-end talent wasn't really there because they didn't have these first-round picks because of the contracts of C.J. Wilson, Albert Pujols, Josh Hamilton, etc. So they didn't have these high picks and the talent that kind of goes along with it. And along with that, they haven't drafted pitchers very high since kind of coming together. But the ones that they have drafted high, you look, Griffin Canning is already back being a starting pitcher. You look at Garrett Richards, starting pitcher. Even though Tyler Skaggs moved organizations and Patrick Corbin moved organizations, those guys developed into starting pitchers. Matt Shoemaker, an undrafted free agent, signed and became a Rookie of the Year candidate and is now, you know, when he's healthy, he's a very good starting pitcher. So it's not that they don't. It's just that the numbers haven't been in favor of the Angels to develop these starting pitchers. What's your take, Jason? I mean, I don't want to keep going and have you, you know, take something from you, but is that kind of where you're going here?
Yeah, that's pretty much. I mean, without knowing much, I usually look at, you know, drafting and development and either target the right guys and then you develop them, and it's a they're correlated. So if you're not doing both, then it's kind of hard to develop starters. But I mean, you just mentioned a bunch of guys that have done really well. It just hasn't been a whole rotation. That's all.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, one final one here. This one from Jeff Stevens at JFFSTPHN3, which does kind of look like Jeff Stevens, says, assuming he gets called up, what numbers, hit offensive numbers, would you predict for Joe Adell in 2020? Jason, go on ahead on this one.
60 homers, 1,000 stolen bases, and like 300 RBI. That's realistic, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. More realistically, I mean, it depends on when he comes up, but probably something like 20 homers, 65 RBI, 25 steals, something like that.
I think that'd be a full season. I feel like that's assuming he comes up on opening day kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so
And where he's hitting in the order and, you know, all that too. So
I wouldn't take RBI into I would say if he has 140 games, right? 140 games.
Okay.
So was that 500 to 600 plate appearances?
I'll say that
he has somewhere between 20 to 25 home runs. Maybe he taps a little further in that. I'm thinking about, he's 21 years old. And Juan Soto is such a special hitter that it's kind of different. It's a little bit more challenging to kind of do these things. But for Joe Adell to be 21 years old and to be able to hit 20-plus home runs, upwards of maybe 25 there, I think that he has a capability of stealing 15 bases if they let him run the way that they want to. As for on-base percentage, I'm going to say that he has roughly an 8 to 9% walk percentage. So that, you know, assuming, you can't predict batting average, but if he hits 270, I would say he has a 330, 340 on base percentage. I think that his ISO would be somewhere in that 150 to 200 range. So what's that? That's like a 450 slugging percentage. So you're looking at OPS of about 800. That's a weighted runs created plus or OPS plus of, you know, probably what, 15 to 20% better than league average. And that's just as a rookie. So that's kind of where I'm going to go when it comes to Joe Adell. Does that sound?
I didn't know you could do that all in your head. That was really fun. That was fun to listen to.
Thank you. Does that sound reasonable, or did it even make sense?
No, I mean, that makes sense. I like it. I have him on many fantasy teams, so I would be very happy with that.
Fair enough. So, Jason, thanks for coming on. Thanks to everyone for asking questions. It's always great to be able to have you guys interact with us. You want to be a part of the show next week, make sure you follow us on Twitter, at Lockdown Angels. You can follow me personally, at Teo Blake Ward. I'll send out that tweet about 9 o'clock on Sunday night, Pacific time, of course, saying, send me any and all your baseball questions. I'll answer them here through midnight. Best ones make the show on Tuesday, or in this case, best ones make the show on Thursday. Jason, thank you for coming on and helping us out. I'm so ecstatic that you're going to be taking on Locked On A's. Where can our listeners not only find you at Locked On A's, but also find you on Twitter, all across the interwebs?
I am at ByJasonB on Twitter, and we are working on getting a Twitter handle for Locked On A's. So when that happens, you'll hear about it on our feed, on iTunes and all that, when that comes up in a couple weeks. And yeah. I'll be around. It'll be fun. We'll be talking about A's. I'll have you on my show and ask you a bunch of questions. It'll be great.
I love it. So, Jason, thanks for coming on for the entire episode. It was a pleasure. Also, thanks to everyone listening in. You want to subscribe and download today's show or any of the episodes to the Locked On Podcast Network, you can do that via Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or any other podcasting outlet that you use. Thanks again for tuning in. Jason, do you know what time it is?
What time is it?
It's closing time. Thanks again for thanks again for tuning in. For Locked On Angels, I'm Taylor Blake Ward saying stay nasty, Anaheim. We'll see you soon.